Albuquerque, Santa Fe. Rebroadcast on KNKT Cannon Air Force Base, K201CC Las Cruces, K228DQ Portales, and online at klyt.fm. From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Thank you so much for joining us today on ABQ Connect. This is Jim Williams with you, sitting in. Steve Ryman will be back with you again tomorrow. I'm joined in studio by Sandoval County Commissioner Jay Block. We're going to have a lot to talk about with Jay. But before we do that, you all have heard over the last month or most of July that starting over on the inside is a prison ministry run by our friend Mark Skalberg. They're our mission of the month here at KLYT. Here's a good word from Mark.
This is Mark Skalberg from Starting Over on the Inside that you've been hearing about right here on KLYT. You know, being a Christ follower means counting the cost, laying down our life, our possessions, our plans, and even our dreams to follow Jesus wherever and however he leads you. You know, most people that are Christ followers aren't under the illusion that following Christ is easy, whether it be in prison or outside of prison. But all the men and women I've met in prison, I am convinced that the church can change the world, regardless of where that church is located, whether in or outside of prison. If we're doing what God would call us to do, we're giving the ministry a way to equip people to be Christ followers, equipping them with the skills and the character qualities while they're inside, so they're equipped to be successful in their transition to the outside. You know, counting the cross as Christians and being the church that God has called us to be does change lives. And starting over is part of that process.
That was Mark Skalberg with Starting Over on the Inside. It's really my pleasure to introduce to you Jay Block. He's a Sandoval County Commissioner, District 2 in Sandoval County. My commissioner, because I live in Corrales, and he also, that covers most of Rio Rancho. Well, Jay, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Steve. This is awesome to be here on the Calvary campus. And unfortunately, because of redistricting, I am no longer your commissioner. But I was for about, when I got elected in 2016, and we just did some redistricting. So my district is mainly all of southern Rio Rancho.
Well, let's talk, Jay, about, people may not be familiar with your name, even though you ran for governor of the state of New Mexico. You're a person that's put yourself out there. I mean, anytime you run for a public office, you're putting yourself at risk. The scrutiny that the public gives your family and you personally, I mean, I guess in some ways it's kind of overwhelming, but you've served on the Sandoval County Commission now for how many years?
So I was elected in 2016. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just to go back a little bit. I'm originally from Manchester, New Hampshire, born and raised back there. It's an old mill town. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting place to grow up. And I left after high school to enlist in the Air Force Reserve for some money for college. And then transferred out to Fargo, North Dakota at North Dakota State, and got into the Air National Guard there. And then while I was in college, I was doing Air Force ROTC. I wanted to become an officer and serve. So graduated from college, put myself through college, took out loans, got a couple scholarships, worked, and whatever it took to get through. And I paid my loans off, by the way, myself.
That's great. When did you come to New Mexico?
Well, I was commissioned in 1995, and I went on the nuclear track in the Air Force. I was the guy sitting underground as a missile launch officer waiting to turn keys and launch Minuteman III missiles, pulling nuclear alert for the country. It was a great honor. It was a huge honor. And then I commanded twice on foreign soil representing our country, once on a British island in the South Atlantic called Ascension Island. I was the senior American officer and commander there. And then in the Netherlands at a NATO nuclear-capable mission over in Europe, and I stayed over in Europe for a few years. And then I also volunteered to go to Afghanistan, and I was able to command and organize some humanitarian missions around the Kabul area, which obviously was in the news a couple years ago when we had the huge debacle there, which was very difficult for a lot of us Afghan vets to see. Well, anyway, I was in Germany. And I came here in July 2015, and I owed the Air Force 1 year. And after that year, I retired and went into private industry doing consulting in the nuclear enterprise. And, you know, Jim, growing up in New Hampshire, it's famous for the first in the nation primary. And I was born in 1970. And I became a Republican in 1980 when Reagan was elected. He reminded me of my grandfather, who's a World War II destroyer guy, a very patriotic guy. And I ended up in high school campaigning for a guy named Jack Kemp, who was running for president in 1987 for the 88 New Hampshire primary. And then in college, I interned for my U.S. senator. But as an officer, you're not allowed to do political activities. So when I retired, I fell in love with New Mexico. I wanted to stay here. I had a great job. And I thought, you know, I'm looking for a second career where everybody loves you. And I thought, well, hey, politics. Everyone loves you in politics, right?
No, no, not. Yeah. Well, so, that's what's so interesting to me. I mean, you mentioned you had a great job. You had a great military career. And to put yourself out there in politics to undergo the scrutiny.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you this and hope it's not offensive. It almost feels like you had a spiritual calling to do it.
Not offensive at all. I think, you know, we all have our calling, whatever it might be. And my calling has been service. I really enjoy serving the country. I enjoyed serving, and I wanted to continue to serve some way as I could. In the military, I was, you know, I was a coach for my kids, you know, did some volunteer work. I enjoyed putting myself out there in Afghanistan. I didn't have to leave Camp Eggers. I was out on the road a lot and for the Afghan people, who I just adored, just fell in love with Afghanistan and the people there. So, yeah, I put myself out there. You know, you talk about being under the microscope, but as a nuclear weapons officer with a top secret clearance, I still have it. I've been under the microscope for a long, long time because the nation trusted me with the nuclear codes.
And you're used to accountability. You're used to reporting. You're used to, this is what's going on with me, and you're making that information now available
to
the public.
And I always wanted to be transparent, even as an elected official. You know, I pushed an ethics ordinance. We got that done. I've been very transparent about my past and how, you know, drugs and alcohol have affected my family. So, you know, mental health, I've talked about my my PTSD coming back from Afghanistan, which, you know, was difficult to talk about publicly. But I want to be able to relate to people and maybe just, if I can just help them, even one person, it's kind of worth it. So I, you know, I'm sitting there, I retired from the Air Force, and I'm like, you know, what can I do? And I said, you know, I'd like to run for office, local office. And so my daughter, who was 19 at the time, she was my campaign manager. No, people told me, Jim, like, no one knows you. You know, it's a Democrat district. No Republicans ever won it. You're not going to win. Just don't even bother. And I've been told no a lot in my whole life, you know, growing up, you know, not a rich kid, growing up with, you know, dyslexia pretty bad for a few years that, you know, you still battle and some other things. But I went out there and knocked a lot of doors, and I won the election with a lot of help. Not much money to take out a Democrat incumbent to turn Sandoval County Republican. And I'm very, very proud of what we've done on the commission for almost 7 years now up there in Sandoval County. We can talk about that a little bit later.
Well, I also want to say to our audience, and I want you to give them your Twitter handle, because they can see that you don't sit on your hands as a commissioner. You are constantly...
Some people would wish I would.
Well, but you are doing things publicly. Yeah, you're not the perfect guy, but you're at all kinds of events. Not even benefits that would necessarily benefit your political career. You're there to help people.
Yeah, it's my on Twitter, you can find me at elect JC Block. It's Commissioner J Block, and then in parentheses, it's candidate for Senate District 12. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, JC Block on Facebook and Instagram. So I'm very connected to a lot of people on social media. And like you said, I love going to small businesses and doing videos with the business owners like I just did at Upscale Burger in Rio Rancho. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you saw that a few days ago. And that's something that I just wanted to do. I wanted to help these businesses get the word out on my platform so people can go see them. And I love hearing, you know, about their business. And I like to try to help them on some of the issues that they're having with their business related to the government. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's city government, county government, or the state, some of these regulations that are just killing businesses, or it was the lockdown that, you know, closed over 50% of our businesses, which now we know, looking back, we did not need to lock down at all. Right. That was the wrong move, big time, that the governor did, and we're still paying for it. But yeah, I'm known as a small business commissioner up there, and you know, I also push forward, and I think you might see the animal shelter is near and dear to my heart as well.
Yes, And we're going to talk a little bit about the animal shelter in our second segment, but because that really is a measure of your compassion and care. You also are concerned about...
Well, I love cats. I think you know that.
and you're also concerned about not just animals, but you're also concerned about people that are being incarcerated. You want them to be rehabilitated, not just, quote, punished or disposed of. You have that heart.
I talked about that during the gubernatorial campaign because that was very important to me, because I really believe that, you know, drugs, alcohol, homelessness, and crime, they're all related. And in relation to, obviously, mental health is a huge part of that. And, you know, later today, I'm going to be taking a tour of this drug and alcohol place where I was able to give them a little bit of money, $8,000, which that's what it costs for one individual to go through drug and alcohol treatment at this one place. So I have some discretionary money, and I wanted to give that money to fund one person. You can change one life. And I'm really excited to go there today. And
Well, I you're always busy. I mean, I haven't seen a week watching you on Twitter where you're not doing at least two projects and recognizing people. Is this true? I know that Mayor Greg Hull of Rio Rancho would say this is true, but it seems like Rio Rancho brags, and I mean that in a positive way, mm-hmm. about the new businesses and the people coming into their community.
Yeah, we, you know, the county and the city, you know, we try to work together on economic development. You have a couple economic development organizations called Sandoval Economic Alliance, headed up by Fred Shepard. You have Area. We have the Rio Rancho Chamber of Commerce, headed up by Jerry Shallow. So all these people are working together. We're putting our energy and focus into economic development to bring businesses up here. And as a county commissioner with Chairman Dave Heil, we started the first ever economic development fund, and we're bringing businesses up the hill to Rio Rancho and Sandoval County from Bernalillo. You know, and most of these businesses, they're not coming to Rio Rancho. We really want to make sure that we're revitalizing the rural areas like Algodones. We have two manufacturing companies that relocated to Algodones. So when I look at, I mean, listen, I live in Rio Rancho. I love Rio Rancho. But I'm not a Rio Rancho County Commissioner. I'm a Sandoval County Commissioner. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with Chief David Coleman in Cuba to get him some assets, some equipment that he needed for his police. I've been able to fund our first ever drug dog for the Sandoval County Sheriff's Department. So it's all those little things that I like to be involved in, just have a little small part to play to make the county a better place. Because, you know, Greg Hull will argue rightfully, and he's absolutely right, Rio Rancho is the best place to live in New Mexico. Sandoval County is the fastest growing county. You know this. You live mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. Why are you there? Well, the streets are safe. The mm-hmm. schools are better. It's more business friendly. And I call Sandoval County and Rio Rancho a beacon of prosperity in New Mexico, in a state that's an island of poverty in the Southwest. If the, you know, the idiots in Santa Fe could just look at what we've done at Rio Rancho and Sandoval County and apply that statewide, New Mexico would be a much better place, instead of, you know, last in education, high crime, and, you know, incredible homelessness, which I really hit hard on in my governor's race. You know, we're awful for business. We have twice as many regulations as the state of Arizona next to us. And look where Arizona's going, and look where we're going. I mean, there's Democrats and Republicans over there in Arizona. They get it. Here in New Mexico, we're just not getting it. We're getting poorer and poorer. We're not growing. People are leaving. People are dying because of the border and the drugs that are coming through. So I guess my point is that what we've done in our little neck of the woods up there in Sandoval County, we're very, very proud of. And I just wish the governor and some of these other far-left Democrats would just stop pushing this agenda that's failing and take a look. We don't even want the credit. I don't care if you're a Democrat in there. Please use this model, take it, and if everyone's successful, that's fantastic. That's all we're asking.
Well, I got to know you, Jay, through the New Mexico Business Coalition and a frequent guest on our program, which I hope you become, by the way.
Thank you. And Larry Sontag.
Carla and Larry Sontag.
And also, Carla has started Better Together.
Yes. And, of course, they're doing phenomenal things with...
Is Carla mean to you?
She's not. She's but she is.
She's a good friend of mine.
Yeah. No. So I don't want to make Carla mad because Larry's a little scary. You know, former law enforcement guy,
former Air Force vet.
There you go.
Security forces guy in Germany.
Hey, but Larry, Carla's a gem.
I love Carla and Larry. They have done so much for New Mexico and pushing the roundhouse up there and really getting this better together. It's an incredible idea that they put in place that they've actually executed on, because they're taking all these groups around the state and they're integrating them, you know, with the force of Better Together, and they're just flooding.
Everything's bipartisan.
Everything's bipartisan.
Jay, I hear that from you too. You are a Republican, but everything you just said is inclusive of all. There's as many businesses in Sandoval County owned by Democrats as there are Republicans as there are independents.
Well, you know, I've been honored to have Democrats reach over and work with me and us as Republicans, whether it was the Second Amendment Sanctuary County. Democrat sheriff supported us. One Democrat county commissioner out of two supported us. When I talk about the 30-30 executive order that the governor signed of taking 30% of your land by 2030 and another 20%, so it's 50-50, we've worked with Rio Arriba County, three county commissioners, all Democrats. They took our resolution to overturn 30-30. Now, granted, the two Democrats didn't support us for whatever reason, which I thought was ridiculous, but three deep blue county commissioners in Rio Arriba worked with us. It was the same thing on right to work around this day. We had McKinley County, all Democrats, work with us on right to work, to which was overturned, by the way, by Janus for public unions. So I've been more than happy to work with Democrats, and it's not that hard to do. In fact, you know, I've worked with Democrats now for 7 years on the county commission, pushing common sense policies forward that have made our county much, much better. And I appreciate them coming over to our side and actually kind of turning away from some of their stuff and saying, yeah, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. We'll support you. Some things they don't. I get it.
Yeah. We're with Commissioner Jay Block. He is a Sandoval County commissioner. He's been serving since 2016 and is about to run for a state Senate seat in District 12.
A brand new district.
Brand new district. So we're going to come back, and I want you to get to know Jay Block a little bit. I want to talk to you about your faith and about your journey in working here in New Mexico and getting to know the people. I really appreciate in the first segment here you talked about loving the people in Afghanistan, because a lot of people, I don't know, they meet people from other cultures and stuff, and they don't necessarily want to adjust to other people. You sound like a guy that loves full-flavored people. You just love people and you want them to have success. So we're going to talk with Jay Block. We're going to take a quick break. I hope you'll stay with us here on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Appreciate you so much listening to us here on ABQ Connect. I'm in studio. This is Jim Williams. I'm in studio with Commissioner Jay Block, Sandoval County Commissioner. Jay, you're a person of faith. Talk to us a little bit about that journey.
It's been a long journey. So, you know, growing up, my grandfather was Jewish. Mm-hmm. In World War II, he met when his destroyer was in Boston for a few days of shore leave or whatever in about 1943. Saw my grandmother at a restaurant, and that was it. He was done. And she was a very strict Catholic from a place called Inverness, Nova Scotia, and she moved down to the Boston area to take care of her mom. And my grandfather converted to becoming a Catholic, and I was baptized Catholic and made my first communion as Catholic back in New Hampshire. And they were extremely faithful people, very, very faithful to their church back there. And I went off to college, and I became a Lutheran, but I was kind of just going through the motion for a long time. And then in 2020, I was going through some things in my life with a tough divorce, and just, you know, you know, when you go through a divorce and you're going through a tough re-election and you're trying to get your life together, it's funny how God works. He'll bring somebody into your life. And up there in Sandoval County, there was this lady named Donnell Inventor. And Donnell, she headed up the Trump team, and she was also heading up volunteers for different candidates up there in Rio Rancho in Sandoval County. And she did a fantastic job for me on the campaign as a door knocker. I mean, best door knocker I've ever seen in my life was her. And she would, we'd always pray before we went out as a group. And I'm like, oh, okay, all right, that's nice. And then she would just keep bothering me, Jim. Like, you know, your typical Baptist. You know, are you saved?
Yeah.
You died today. Do you know if you'd go to heaven? I'm like, geez, back off. Okay. And finally, because she was doing so much work for me and other candidates, I said, you know what, Donnell? Fine. I'll go to church if it just shuts you up. So I went to Gospel Light Baptist Church in Rio Rancho up on Southern and went there and listened to the pastor, a guy named Pastor Brent Lenentine, who started the church in July of 1988, 35 years ago, and had a couple of one-on-one meetings with the pastor, and just I fell in love with the church, and I got baptized a year later in July of 21 in the church, and it just... I've been involved in the church. I love the men's prayer breakfast. So my faith of as accepting Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior has really changed my life, and it's kind of maybe softened my language a lot, which I'm sure some people are happy because I could, you know, being in the military, you just, no excuse. But, you know, it has changed my outlook on a lot of things. I can still have a little bit of a temper. I can still be impatient, you know, but I, you know, being a Christian reminds me of like being a doctor or a lawyer. You know, they're practicing law, they're practicing medicine. We're practicing following Jesus. And while I have some rough edges around me still, I can be outspoken. Every morning I get my Bible app out and I do that. I pray every single day. I prayed coming over here. And you can just, for me, it's just a habit of praying. I'll be outside watering our plants just even for like, you know, 5 minutes and just praying and just talking to God for a few minutes and just letting him know where I'm at. And, you
and I hadn't had a chance to really visit much before this interview.
No,
but in the short time that we've been talking, I've heard you even before we started today talking a little bit about Afghanistan and a lot of this stuff, your compassion for people, your love for people that was already there before you came a Christian. So I have this theory. Jay, I have this theory that God is leading you even in those days and is working through your life to help other people. Share us a story from Afghanistan because you said you love the people. It was a difficult time.
So, I may need a little help.
Hey, the emotions are part of what I think our listeners are really going to appreciate because they will hear in your voice how much it means to you.
Yeah, I think it's hard because, you know, I really didn't have it that bad. I had a couple bad days, but there were guys, men and women over there longer than I was that had it way worse. So you kind of feel like I don't have a right to complain. But I remember after 9/11, just how... I think how angry we all were. And I had this just hate in my heart for Muslims. Mm-hmm. I just did. I mean, they attacked our country. They did it before 1998 when they bombed our embassies in Africa. You know, they bombed the World Trade Center in 93. And you, 1980s, you saw all the terrorism from Muslims. So that shaped my thinking that they hate us. And you know, we got to kill these people who are trying to kill us. So I volunteered to go over there. I didn't have to as a nuclear guy. It was important to me to get in the fight and do my part. Because I know I would have regretted not going if I retired and didn't get a chance to go. But when I got over there, there's two people that I met, civilians. One lady, her name was Mina Sherza. Mina was an interpreter for us. She left Afghanistan when she was 19 years old, and she came to the U.S. She had a beautiful family in Virginia, but she left her family and went over to Afghanistan for a few years, and she was one of my interpreters. The other guy was a guy named Hamraz Samir, and Hamraz was a He was a Pashtun, and Hamraz saved my life one day over there when we got caught up in a riot. And I thought Hamraz turned on us. I almost had to shoot and kill this guy. And, you know, we would talk about our families and, you know, my grandfather's, you know, Jewish blood in my family, and he was a Muslim. And I snuck out one time. I went to Hamraz's house for Eid celebration after Ramadan. And Hamraz is like a brother to me. He said, I wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for Hamraz. And now Hamraz is I helped him become a U.S. citizen, him and his family. So he's doing great things. But I think when on Fridays, we did Fridays over there, it was sort of a down day, and we did these volunteer activities where we'd get all these supplies and food and clothing in, and we'd go out to different orphanages or refugee camps, and Mina and I and Hamraz would go to these places, and seeing the children, how they were living, it just broke your heart. It just broke your heart. And that was the best part of my military career, being over there and doing that. And quite frankly, it was probably the worst part of my military career, and the stuff you see and the stuff that it goes on that you see over there. And, I've been home now for, 17 years? Mm-hmm. And not a day goes by that I don't think about my experience there. And it's just stuck with me.
But you've gone from being angry at Muslims to loving Muslims and loving the people. But I want to add something to it, and I don't want this to be a hard question. You more than anyone probably, or as much as anyone, I should say, understand that there is evil in the world. That has nothing to do with Muslims, has nothing to do with Americans. It has to do with really, I think, a spiritual condition. And I know you have fought to support law enforcement in our country because you understand evil.
I've seen it. I think we see it here, especially in New Mexico. We see it now in this country with everything that's coming across the border with, you know, the cartels, the human trafficking, the child sex trafficking, the drug trafficking. You can see it when you're going down, you know, Central or, you know, so many places around New Mexico. It doesn't matter. And this issue cuts across, you know, economics of everybody, poor, middle class, rich, white, black, Asian, Hispanic. And these people have value. And I think that's one of the things that my faith has taught me over the past few years is that person on the street that I just saw doing drugs. In fact, I just saw someone when I was down in Berlin at the Loves there because I was getting ready to fly to Deming with a guy named Neil Heiss, who's just an incredible guy. But I saw a lady doing drugs right outside the store next to the door. Mm-hmm. She was doing drugs. And I just thought, you know, that's somebody's daughter or that's somebody's son. And it's like, how did they get there? Okay, they got there that way. There's nothing you can do about it now, but you can now try to help them out as best you can. And, you know, my mother went through a drug and alcohol treatment program growing up when I was a teenager. So that's stuck with me. Where I still believe there's value in everybody, which is why, you know, we have to invest a lot of capital in helping these people and give them the opportunity to get better and get well and get back on their feet. And I've had Republicans criticize me for that. The Democrats haven't moved off of, you know, they haven't done that either. But, you know, this country now has a huge mental health problem and it's got a huge drug problem. And, you know, we talk about ministries in these jails. My jail up there in Sandoval County, it's really a mental health facility. Mm-hmm. And these people need beds. They need inpatient care. They need outpatient care. They need a lot of care. They need a lot of love. And we got to get the ministries back in these jails to minister to these people and give them some hope.
I hear you saying these people need to be brought back into the community. There's too much isolation. There's too much alone time for a lot of people.
Well, the lockdowns really didn't do us any favors there.
Absolutely. We're with County Commissioner, Sandoval County Commissioner Jay Block here on ABQ Connect. We're going to be back with more with Jay. I hope you'll stay with us. We'll be right back.
KLYT. This is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
Hey, we are back with Commissioner Jay Block, Sandoval County Commissioner, and we're going to have a little twist now because, Jay, you've been serving a long time as the county commissioner, and we have another election coming up in 24, and you're going to be running for the new state Senate seat, District 12. How's that going to change your service to New Mexico?
It really isn't. You know, my political philosophy of serving the people, whether it's Sandoval County or up at the state Senate, it's not going to change. I'm still going to go around to the businesses and do funny videos with them and, you know, try their food and, you know, their pet stores or whatever it is. That's not going to change. That's just who I am. I love getting their message out, and I love hearing their stories. So that's going to be the same when I'm elected next year, because I term out as a county commissioner, and I'd like to continue to serve because there's a lot of work to do here in New Mexico.
There is a lot of work. Tell me why. We said earlier in the first segment that Rio Rancho is really a blossoming area in a state that is largely not blossoming. We have negative population growth. I mean, we can go through all kinds of issues. Is it absolute rocket science that Sandoval County has a special formula, or is it something that everyone could emulate?
It's something everyone could emulate, and you could, you know, twist it up a little bit depending if you're in Tucumcari or Deming or, you know, up in Espanola or out in Gallup. But, you know, you use our model of being pro-business and pro-law enforcement, and you focus on infrastructure for your roads. I think it's just simple to me. I mean, I'm a simple nuclear weapons guy. Mm-hmm. You know, everything I did in the Air Force had a checklist, you know, do this, do this, do this, do this. So, you know, I think a lot of it, too, is what we've had in Sandoval County is we've had a lot of community involvement from different groups to help us with some of the stuff, whether it's horses or whether it's elections or whether it's roads. You know, we have been very open and transparent as a county to the public and working with the public. And I think that has helped, too. And the public has brought some great ideas to the county that we've implemented because you'd be surprised, Jim, but government's not smarter than the people.
Mm.
That's a concept I think that we need to spread around the country.
I can't help but ask you this. And Steve Pierce, who's the chairman of the New Mexico Republican Party, said this to us a couple, 3 years ago. He said, Jim, the hardest part for me is that only 50% of the faith community in this state is registered to vote. And the hardest pill to swallow is that only half of those people actually vote come election time. How can we get people into the voting booth? Because that one vote each one of us has means a lot, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I think you're starting to see churches, I don't want to say become more political, but I think they're becoming more of an advocacy group to their congregations. You know, my pastor, Pastor Lenentine, you know, he talks about, and churches have to be political. They have to talk about issues that are in the Bible that are affecting people every single day. And when the pastors, very, very good ones like ours up at Gospel Light Baptist Church, can shape that message and really have the precision of that biblical message on a particular issue and motivate people to go out and vote, that's critical. But then you also have so many groups out there that, you know, whether it's, you know, New Mexico Election Integrity, headed up by John Veltri, or you have Carla Sontag with Better Together New Mexico, they're bringing more and more people in for their specific issue to go out and motivate people. We need people on the ground to go register people to vote and also talk to other Democrats, say, hey, it's not the same Democrat Party that you grew up with John Kennedy. John Kennedy was pro-life, pro-gun, cut taxes, pro-America, strong American defense and foreign policy. He's a Republican today. It's not the same Democrat Party. I mean, it's just when, I mean.
Let me tell you, I went on the Democrat Party website, and I'm obviously pro-life. I wanted to read what the party's position was.
Yeah.
The way I read it, and anybody can go to the Democrat Party website, and you can read their mission statement. Clearly, I don't see any room for pro-life people based on that mission statement.
No, because the listen, and there's people in the Republican Party, if a candidate is if a candidate is like, listen, I'm willing to work with the other side and compromise. Listen, the candidate might say, I'm a pro-life guy, but I'm willing to work with the pro-choice people to get something done to move the needle from full-term, you know, nine-month abortion to something a little bit less. I'm mm-hmm. willing to move the needle there and willing to compromise. Mm-hmm. People on the right don't want to compromise either, and people on the left don't want to compromise either.
In fact, I have told many people sitting in that chair right where you are right now, I said, look, if you're asking for all or nothing,
you're not going to get it.
You're going to get it. You're not going to get it.
You're not going to get it. You know, there's got to be some common ground there, and you're going to have your people that are on the far right and the far left, and they're just not going to come together. There is trench warfare from World War I. They're just there. They're not moving. But there are so many other issues where Democrats are coming over to the Republicans when it comes to law enforcement, because they're tired of not being able to take their kids to the park, and they got to watch out for needles, or they have to watch out for human waste on the park. Or they're seeing police officers gunned down like we just saw with Officer Ferguson by a scumbag who shouldn't have been on the street anyway. And then you got Representative Bill Ream in Albuquerque, probably the most pro-law enforcement guy up there in the roundhouse, who put several bills forward. None of them could get out of committee. I mean, it's just, let's put the politics aside and just have some common sense solutions here when it comes to crime, when it comes to education, because, you know, China is laughing at us because we're more focused on gender than we are on reading, writing, arithmetic, technology, preparing our kids for the future, because the 21st century, I hope it's an American century like the 20th was, but it is looking more like a Chinese 21st century. And that's scary for the security of our country. And then you look at censorship and big government control. I mean, they want to control your stove, your car, you know, your water heater, you know, what you're watching on TV. They want to control your social media. That's dangerous. I mean, free speech and open dialogue is something that should be celebrated, whether it's on a college campus where University of New Mexico almost goes into a riot when they have Charlie Kirk over there. You know, people are just got to relax a little bit, have an open dialogue, respect each other, because if I can take all that, I don't know if hate's the right word I had, but if I can take all those negative feelings that I had toward Muslims when I went over to Afghanistan because of what happened to our country, and I can change and call a Muslim my brother who saved my life and who I love dearly, then can't we as Americans just kind of soften it up a little bit on some of these hard-nosed issues where we just want to scream at each other and kill each other over? I mean, you know, this isn't the blue and the gray anymore. This is the red and the blue civil war that we have. It's an ideological civil war with no boundaries. And I'm worried about the country. I really am worried about the country.
Sounds though you wouldn't be serving if you didn't believe that people could work together on both sides of the aisle.
True. And, you know, I don't want to sound hypocritical here, because I get so passionate about some of my beliefs. I've been part of the problem, you know, and just getting so upset at the other side for, like, how do you not see this? And I'm sure they're upset at me, like, how do you not see our side? And it takes us to kind of train our brains a little bit and to maybe open our hearts and open our ears and shut our mouths and to actually listen to the other side.
I saw a meme not too long ago that said, you can be right, but wrong at the top of your voice.
Absolutely.
And, you know, tone is something that I'm often not handling well. My tone is obnoxious or boisterous or... And, you know, I can't help but go back to say, God humbles me every day.
There are so many Bible passages about how we speak to others and the language that we use. In fact, when Donnell Inventor gave me a Bible, she tabbed out about 30 verses when it came to speech and language in the Bible and how we should speak to each other as Christians, because we should love each other. Whether or not we agree with each other or not, and, you know, we've had families torn apart by so many things of politics. I don't remember it growing up in the 80s or even the 90s being like this. It's getting worse and worse and worse. And I think as Americans, if we just can come together somehow and respect each other and listen to each other, things would be a lot better. Because I had to do that in my life when I served over in Afghanistan. I actually got to know these people, and I got a different perspective. Same thing with living over in Europe. You get a different perspective, and living around the country, different perspective. So,
well, I think a lot of times fear dictates the way we have perspectives about other people, and your life experience has helped you overcome a lot of fear. You probably have a profound sense of your own sin, but you've seen God work, use that actually in a very, for his strength. You know, your weakness becomes God's strength as you're ministering. You've been very open about stuff in your life, and I believe that's going to minister to our audience, people that are listening right now. We've got one more segment with Great. Commissioner Jay Block. If you'd like to call and talk with Commissioner Block, I probably should open up the lines a little earlier. 505-338-5790. You're welcome to call and ask Commissioner Block a question. He's here for New Mexico. He's here for you. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be right back with one more segment.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Hi, this is Jim Williams with you on ABQ Connect. I'm joined in studio by Sandoval County Commissioner Jay Block. We've had three segments together. Our last segment, Jay, you've been representing Sandoval County now. You'll have 8 years under your belt, and then if you are elected to the District 12 State Senate seat, and I should mention to people that you've termed out. You can't run for another Sandoval County Commissioner seat.
Yeah, being a county commissioner is a great education, learning local politics and how government works. And I do want to take that experience and those successes that we've had and bring them up to the roundhouse like they talked about earlier. But the Senate District 12, it's an open seat. It's a redrawn seat. It actually leans Republican. And about two-thirds of the seat is in Rio Rancho, Southern Rio Rancho, that I already represent. And the other third is like Northwest Albuquerque, the Paradise Hills, Seven Bar area there, which is a pretty conservative area as well. So, you know, this is an opportunity to make a dent in the huge margin that the Democrats have, where they can just, you know, almost supermajority us into out of existence, which is basically what they're trying to do. So this will be a great pickup of a seat, and I'm looking forward to winning the primary and then representing my district, and not just my district, but to me, you're up there fighting for the entire state of New Mexico, whether somebody lives in, you know, Farmington or Hobbs or wherever, I still want to fight for everybody to make the state what it can be. And unfortunately, what it isn't, it's just not working for a lot of people.
You've been here long enough to know the geography of the state. And I know you had to tour the whole state, especially when you were running for governor.
Yeah, I flew around the whole state with a guy named Neil Heiss, who owns a great company in Belen, Semco. And Neil is just a great patriot, and I love the man.
Do you see advantages to different geographies and different people? And maybe you could bring this to Las Cruces and this to Hobbs and this to Rio Rancho and this to Albuquerque and this to Belen. Do you see the state that way, where everybody could be doing something?
I do. It's a large state, but it's a diverse state because you have an urban area here in the Albuquerque corridor. You have the rural area. You have the pueblos and tribes, which are very important, which we have 14 of them in Sandoval County. That's the second highest amount of tribes and pueblos in any county in the United States besides San Diego County in California. So having that experience as well, as a Sandoval County commissioner with urban, rural, and Native American communities, that gives me a heck of a perspective, along with the small town communities like Cuba and Algodones and Corrales and Bernalillo and Placidas that we support as well. So Sandoval County is... it has given me a very well-rounded perspective in relation to the entire state. When I travel to Tucumcari, it reminds me of some issues that we're having in Cuba. You know, when I travel down to Hobbs and Roswell, in Artesia, it reminds me of the oil and gas industry we have in Sandoval County. Mm-hmm. You know, when I traveled down to Deming in Lordsburg and some of the issues they're having with economic development and infrastructure, it reminds me of what we're doing in Sandoval County. When I see St. Teresa down in on the border there and what they're doing with the incredible business logistics and things like that, I'm like, we should be working on that in Sandoval County. Or, by the way, Gallup, McKinley County, to me, is so prime for development because it's on I-40. It's got a railroad. It's right next to Arizona. And then I look at, you know, for some reason, Tucumcari and Santa Rosa, two of my favorite places. They're, you know, they're on a interstate. They're on a highway. I'm sorry, they're on a railroad. They're right near Texas. They should be doing a heck of a lot better than what they're doing. And then you look at, we have two national labs here with incredible talent doing amazing things for national security. And then we have three Air Force bases, and you can almost count the Army base because most of it down there in El Paso is the training ground in New Mexico. Then we have White Sands Missile Range. We have all the ingredients here to just make this place incredible for all people in New Mexico, but we're not doing it. We're failing miserably because of the policies that have been put in place.
Well, and I totally agree with you. I'm dumbfounded, frankly, when I look at the way our forefathers perceived government. And that really, New Mexico is a model of like the U.S. Constitution. We have our own constitution, but mm-hmm. it's modeled after the federal government's what our forefathers wrote. What I believe our forefathers wanted is they wanted to structure politics so that it was as even as possible. Voting districts, the time you speak here, the time you speak there. Now, does human selfishness come into effect? Yes. That's why I believe our forefathers designed a government that would take into consideration our faults, and they designed something that would protect us from ourselves.
It's called a republic.
Exactly. But here's the part that bothers me. When we're doing all this gerrymandering, redistricting, We're trying to give different parties an advantage rather than adjusting it so it's as equal as possible. We could never make it exactly equal. But instead of doing what the hearts of our forefathers were, we're trying to gain an advantage, and that doesn't work for the benefit of our
state.
Well,
there's just so much corruption out there, whether it's, you know, outside money that comes in, and, you know, that's why I favor term limits. I'm a limited government guy. I really believe that you should go there. I'm term limited on the county commission, 2 years gone. If I'm elected to the Senate, you know, you can go forever, and I think that's a huge mistake. You got to be term limited out as a state rep and a state senator. The governor's term limited. I think the treasurer's term limited is, yeah, they are. Term limits are a good thing, in my opinion, because you just get, like, you know, you look at Joe Biden. He's been in government for 50 years. Mm. What has he done? Well, he's ruined the country. You know, you look at even Republicans, Mitch McConnell. Oh, my goodness, time to go. You get these people that they lose sight of the average, what I call the average Joe Bag of Donuts dude out there who's trying to support his family or his wife and his kids and just trying to make it. And I think they lose perspective on why they're there. They're there to serve. They're there to do the right thing, regardless of party. And it's not that hard. This country has just, you know, $32 trillion in debt. We're not respected around the world anymore. Our military is in decline. You know, we have high inflation. Poverty rates are incredible. We're here in New Mexico last in child well-being. Mm. Drugs are killing our population. In fact, the highest cause of death between people 18 to 44 is drug overdose in the country now.
Mm. And many of those overdoses now are accidental because there's Confederate, medicine being passed out. There's fentanyl that looks like aspirin. I mean, it's scary.
Yeah, and you know, I got in a little bit of, some people were upset at me at the county commission last meeting because we had this guy from this addiction place talking, and I told him, man, my goal is to make you unemployed. Mm-hmm. I would love for you not to have a job because that'd be great if we didn't have people in
these
addiction.
And I bet you he would concur with that.
And he absolutely agreed with it, and I'm going to tour his place. But, you know, I said, these drugs are killing us. And these people who are pushing these drugs and these drug dealers, you got to put them away. You got to kill them. I'm telling you, I have talked to grandmothers who lost their 15, 16-year-old granddaughter because of a drug dealer pushing fentanyl. And unfortunately, that's systemic across the country. It's just evil.
It is a scary time, and I would say that a lot of those drug dealers have a chance to repent and become one of God's people as well, but I will
tell
you.
That's where
I
got to work on it, too.
There you go. Jay, thank you so much for joining
us
today.
Jim,
awesome. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT. This is KLYT, Albuquerque, Santa Fe, online at KLYT.fm.
This is Jay Sekulow. Well, it's shocking, or is it? The FBI illegally spying on a U.S. senator per the FISA court. Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Well, we're supposed to say it's shocking and it's unbelievable and we can't believe it's happened in the United States. But I'm not so sure it is shocking these days. And that is, according to an order that's come down from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Now, that is a court that issues FISA warrants. They approve them. They supervise it. You don't have defense lawyers there, so it's a bit of a, almost like a star chamber in a sense, that the way this thing works. And you had a situation, and they've issued a 117-page opinion order saying, you know, you didn't go through government, FBI again here. You didn't go through the proper proceedings in order to conduct a search on sensitive query terms. That's the words they use.